everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. I'm very pleased because Dr. Charlie Glickman is my guest for the second week in a row. And last week we spoke about, the man in a box. To learn more about that, either listen to the show archived by now, or go to charlieglickman.com and you can see a video about it. But it's much better to listen to the show. Charlie is, he's a great guy. He's a sex and relationship coach, a sexuality educator, and an internationally acclaimed speaker. Hello, Charlie. Good to have you back.
Hi, Diane. It's a pleasure to be back again. How are you today?
Good. I should tell people that there is a voicemail feature. I did mention this last week. So if you don't want to come on the air, if you're listening to us live, you can by calling 888-874-4888. You'll talk to our producer. He will screen you, and you'll get to come on with a question. If you're shy about that, you can leave a question at voicemail. You can also do this if you're listening to the archive version. So identify Love, Lust, and Laughter, and Dr. Charlie Glickman, and the number for the voicemail is 862-800-6805. And Charlie, you're so good at fielding questions, and because you know your subject. And the subject today is prostate pleasure, and you've written a book. Tell us about the book. You co-wrote it,
Yes, I co-wrote it. My co-author, Aislinn Amirzian, and I wrote The Ultimate Guide to Prostate Pleasure, available on Amazon and anywhere that you can find sex education books. And you know, we wrote it because Aislinn was actually the one who had the realization that there were quite a few books and resources out there talking about G-spot play, but that there really wasn't anything comprehensive and complete on the topic of prostate play. And given that the prostate is the male G-spot, we decided that that was something that we needed to fix.
And you did fix it. I'm sorry. I usually read the book of the guests, but I have not read your book. I do know a fair amount about prostates, and I'm going to learn even more. By the way, lots of people say prostrate rather than prostate. And so it's mispronounced by a lot of people.
It's true. And given that prostrate means to lie down, so I always like to say that first you get prostrate and then you get to the prostate.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and especially if you're going to, for a prostate exam by a doctor, he'll often have the man put his butt in the air, either at the end of the exam table, or how does that go for a prostate exam?
Well, so the thing about prostate exams is that first off, I just want to mention that doctors are trained to make it not feel good. They don't want it to hurt, but they don't want it to be pleasurable because they don't want their patients to think that they are being creepy. So if you've ever been to the doctor and gotten your prostate checked and thought to yourself, well, I don't see why men would enjoy this because that wasn't any fun, you have to remember that women go to the OBGYN and get exams and get pap smears all the time. That's a completely different experience than enjoying vaginal penetration and intercourse and other ways of having sex. So don't let your experience at the doctor turn you off to exploring prostate play. Two totally different things.
But even though Well, the urologist may, in fact, during the prostate exam, he may need to milk the prostate if there's an infection, and because he'll want to get some of the fluids. Is that right?
Correct. That's correct.
That's what I've read.
They'll do that sometimes for prostate infections. It can also be part of STI, a sexually transmitted infection exam, depending on what the concerns are. But even so, they're doing it for, 15 to 30 seconds at most. It's a fairly quick procedure. But again, unless you get turned on by the little fabric gown and the cold table in the doctor's office, I promise you that your experience at home is going to be very different than what happens on the exam table.
Yes, I would think so.
I hope so.
Yeah. So let's talk about what the prostate is and where it is.
Sure.
So, but I think it's, I just start that with this, because I think this is really interesting. At birth, the prostate is the size of a pea and reaches normal size by age 20. So, and then for a lot of men, by the age of 40, the prostate often begins to grow, and that can signal some problems. But let's talk about it is.
Sure. Well, and you're absolutely right, Diana, that it starts off much smaller at birth, and it gets a big growth spurt during adolescence in the same way that the genitals or breasts change under the influence of hormones. The prostate grows, too. From a reproductive angle, what the prostate does is produces somewhere between 30 and 50% of the fluid in semen. Sperm are less than 5% of the fluid, which is why if somebody has had a vasectomy, his semen really won't change. Color, volume, taste, texture, it doesn't change because sperm are such a small percentage of what's in there. And so the prostate sits in the pelvis. It's at the very deepest end of the penis. So most of the time when people think about penis length, they're thinking about the part that sticks out of the body because, that's what you can touch and that's what's useful for penetrative sex. But the penis actually extends into the body by a good couple of inches. And you can see that on somebody who has an erection. If he lies on his back and spreads his legs, you can see the bulb of the shaft going well back into the perineum. The prostate sits just above and just behind the deepest portion of the penis. And so during arousal, it starts to produce fluid and fills up like a little water balloon. And it gets larger. It's about an inch in diameter when it's not aroused. When it is aroused, it can be quite a bit bigger than that, inch and a half, 2 inches even. And then during ejaculation, the prostate squeezes all of that fluid out into the urethra. It mixes with the sperm, and then the ejaculation muscles push it out. So that's from the reproductive side, what the function of the prostate is.
From the reproductive side, yes.
Right. From a pleasure perspective, the prostate is very similar to the G-spot in the same way that the penis and the clitoris are similar, or the testicles and the ovaries. We come from the same basic template, and then there's a variety of ways that bodies develop.
Dr. Charlie, would you explain that? I mean, I know about that, but would you explain the... Is the word homologous parts?
Homologous.
Yes.
Homologous means change.
Explain that, because I think it's fascinating. So, yes, please explain.
Sure. So if you could take a look at a developing fetus before about the 8th week after conception, you wouldn't be able to tell from looking at it what sort of genitals were going to grow. There's a little part that grows out and a little part that grows in. And then around the eighth week after conception, if the fetus has XY chromosomes, then in most cases, there is an increase in testosterone production and the genitals form into a penis and testicles and prostate and scrotum. Mm-hmm. If there is XX chromosomes and there isn't that same testosterone, then you get a clitoris and labia and ovaries and uterus. Now, these are generalizations because there are, I think they have documented something like 16 or 17 different chromosomal patterns that might show up, so we're not all XX or XY. And then there are situations where you can have one chromosomal pattern, but because of hormonal differences, your body grows in this direction. So there's a lot more complexity here. But for the majority of people with XY chromosomes, then you get testosterone, and then you get a prostate and a penis. But why this is really interesting is that it means that we all come from the same basic template.
Yeah. Yes.
And we grow in these different ways. But the penis and the clitoris, if you look at them under a microscope, the tissues look very, very similar.
Yes, they have similar erectile tissues, and even the amounts of erectile tissues. And although
exactly.
I understand that the clitoris has some, may have a few more, because they may have the clitoris and all that's behind it, 6,000 to 8,000 nerve fibers, and the penis may have about 4,000. And what's
yes.
fascinating to me, we're getting off subject here a little bit, but what's fascinating to me is that the clitoris has only one function, and that's for pleasure, whereas we know the penis
right.
has many functions. But it's really interesting for people to know that when we start out at conception and then in utero, we all look about the same. We can't tell if it's a male or a female. And then,
exactly.
As you said, up until about, then there's the increase in testosterone. And so with the XY, and so the penis then develops.
Exactly. And the reason why this is important when we're talking
yeah.
about prostate pleasure is that when it comes to the kinds of stimulation people like, as well as the ways that people describe their experiences, prostate pleasure and G-spot stimulation are remarkably similar.
Mm-hmm.
People will talk about how the orgasms feel much bigger, more full body, more diffuse, more powerful, as compared to the more localized or focused or concentrated orgasm that they get from penis or clitoris stimulation. And when it comes to the techniques that people enjoy, probably 90% of them, if not more, of the techniques that work for the G-spot also work for the prostate. In fact, so much so that I had a friend who had been dating women exclusively for a number of years, and then she met a guy and they started dating, and he liked prostate play, and she asked me about it because it had been a number of years since she had been with a man. And
yes.
I said, all right, well, you know about anal play, right? She said, yes. And I said, you know about G-spot play, right? And she said, yes. And I said, well, just put them together and you know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what she did. And she sent me a text message a few days later saying, yeah, you were right. I was worried about something that I didn't need to worry about.
Wasn't that great feedback for you? Yes.
Isn't that sweet?
It is very sweet. It's very sweet. So the prostate, what else should we know about it before we move on to why do men, other than what you just said, why do men enjoy prostate play? And you've talked about how it's very similar to the G-spot. But anything else we should know about about the prostate as a whole?
Sure. The easiest way to reach the prostate is through anal penetration. We can talk in a little bit about, you know, how to do mm-hmm. that safely. But you can also get some pretty amazing prostate stimulation without anal penetration by massaging the perineum, which is the area between the testicles and the anus.
Yes.
Perineum or perineum. It's like Caribbean.
Yeah.
They're both right.
Right, that's
and
right.
And the easiest way that you can do it is actually to take a vibrator like the magic wand, one of the more powerful vibrators, and you hold it right up against the perineum with a fair bit of pressure while you've got the vibrator turned on. You can also do it with the heel of your hand pressing up in there. It's not going to be as sensitive because, you know, you're massaging through a couple of inches of tissue. So it's like giving somebody a back rub when they're wearing a sweatshirt versus on bare skin. But that's a really fun way to start bringing prostate stimulation into your repertoire, especially if your partner has any hesitation or concern about anal penetration. So, you know,
yes, I would think that would be a way to ease into it and see if because some men are a little I've had clients where we talk about anal play. They're like flaming heterosexual men, and then they worry that they might be considered gay if they enjoy this. I mean, that's still common, even with all the information out there. But do you want to talk about that, Charlie?
Yeah, I'd love to. You know, when we wrote the book, before we started writing it, we started by surveying. We set up an internet survey, and we ended up getting information from over 200 people, both men and partners of men. And one of the questions that we asked was, what were some of the questions or concerns that you had about prostate play? And we heard three over and over again. Is this going to hurt? Is this going to get messy? And mm-hmm. does this mean that I'm gay? Now mm-hmm. those first two questions, those are technical questions about anal play, and I've heard those from people of all genders, right? That's just, how do I do this in a way that is safe and pleasurable?
Mm-hmm.
But that third question, really, and this is where you might want to go back and listen to the recording from last week, but that third mm-hmm. question really rests on this idea that being penetrated means taking on the woman's role. It means giving up masculine status. If you enjoy this, it must mean that you're gay. These are all common ways of that people have these fears. And
yeah.
what I'd like to point out is that your sexual orientation is about who you want to have sex with. What kinds of stimulation feel good to you? That's about where your nerve endings are. And those two things are separate questions. So another
That's
way that you...
That's a very good point.
Right?
So who you want to have sex with...
Yeah. Is different than what you want to do.
And say the last thing again, just one more time.
Who you
want
to have sex with is different than what you want to do.
Different than what you want to do, yes.
Yeah, two different
can you, things.
Well, and by definition, from a sexological perspective, any sexual activity between people of different genders is inherently heterosexual, regardless of what they're doing.
That's an interesting idea. Please say more.
Well, I mean, you know, if the words homosexual and heterosexual, but homosexual means same sex. And heterosexual means other, right? So not same sex. And that means that anything that a man and a woman do together sexually is inherently heterosexual, even if she's wearing a strap-on dildo and he's receiving anal penetration. That is still heterosexual sex.
Yes, and that jumps us ahead because we were going to talk about pegging, but let's not talk about it quite yet. But
yeah,
that,
we'll hold on. We'll tease people. We'll tease a little bit.
We'll tease. Oh, yeah, teasing is always good, I think, as long as it's done. As long as it's done in a positive way and not a mean way, right?
Exactly.
So we're teasing now, so people will stay listening till the end or toward the end when we'll actually talk more about pegging.
Yeah.
Okay.
I realize there's one other thing I want to mention about the location of the prostate.
Please.
Which is that if you're going to massage someone's prostate, and we'll talk about how to get a finger safely and comfortably inserted into somebody, but the prostate is 3 to 4 inches inside the body. That doesn't mean that it moves. It's that it's an inch in diameter. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you were inserting a finger into somebody's anus, at the 3-inch mark, you're going to just touch the prostate, and then you've got another inch of distance before you reach the backside of the prostate. And in terms of the location, if you insert your finger and curl it towards the belly button, so if he's on his back, you curl your finger up. If he's on his hands and knees, you curl your finger down. Again, just like the G-spot. What you're looking for is a sensation. It'll feel kind of like a ripe plum, where it's round and firm, but also a little bit like you can press into it. It's not hard. It's soft. But what can make it tricky to find the prostate, when we were talking before about how it enlarges during arousal, that means that if somebody is not super turned on yet and you go looking for his prostate, you might not be able to find it because it hasn't swollen up with fluid. But if you went looking for it after he was already turned on, you know, maybe you were giving him a blowjob or you were flirting or dirty dancing, whatever it is, as the prostate swells with fluid, it becomes much easier to find. So if you've gone looking for someone's prostate and you couldn't find it, that could be one of the reasons why.
And once again, it's very similar to the G-spot, because at an unaroused state, the G-spot can feel or is about the size of a dime, and then when it's aroused, it can feel more corrugated and more the size of a quarter. So again, we have these crossovers between men and women. Prostates and
it's so similar.
G-spots, yeah. I think that more women have discovered their G-spots thanks to lots of articles and books and talk about it, and the sex toys that target G-spots. And maybe there isn't quite as much around the prostate. I know there are sex toys that are meant to stimulate, and you have some of that on your website, the sex toys.
I do. You're right. There isn't as much information. But then again, when I think about the book that the G-spot that came out in 1982, Beverly Whipple and others. That was the only book on the market for quite a long time before other people started to catch on. So who knows, maybe in another 10 or 15 years, there may be some other resources on the prostate. I would love to see it, because I think that people are missing out on a part of their body that has incredible pleasure potential.
Yes, and health benefits as well. You wanted to talk, and I do too, more about why men enjoy prostate play. And let's talk about just the pleasure of it. I do know that that some men will report that gently stroking or rubbing the prostate gland enhances their sense of orgasm. I know that's true for the G-spot, too.
It definitely is. Well, so there's mm-hmm. a few reasons why folks like prostate play. One is simply that for a lot of people, it feels really good. And mm-hmm. That includes men who enjoy prostate stimulation when that's the only thing that they're doing, as well as people who enjoy it when it's included with, for example, penis stimulation. In the same way that some women like to have their G-spot touched and nothing else, and other women like to have the G-spot and the clitoris touched at the same time.
It can be a more intense orgasm because you have triorgasmic experience can be anal penetration for a woman. Now I'm talking about a woman. Anal penetration maybe with a finger, well lubricated or gloved, same as with going into a man's anus for prostate pleasure. But if a woman is getting anal stimulation and G-spot stimulation and clitoral stimulation, I think all of those nerves are kind of intertwined, and it can be a very powerful orgasm if you get those various points of stimulation. And I know, because I'm not a guy, I don't know as much about, and I haven't heard from my clients as much and haven't read as much about it. So I'm so glad we're having this conversation. It's very important. Yeah.
Well, people should get
your book.
I would love that. Well, and so some of it is that, you know, some people enjoy prostate play as a main course, and for some people mm-hmm. it's an add-on. For some men, part of the enjoyment of it is that they can, you know, lie back on the bed and relax and actually get to experience that, because for a lot of men, sex is something that they are doing, right? They're very active. They're doing all of the motion. There can be something very freeing about relaxing back into it and letting somebody else drive the car.
So that's another reason why people like it.
Yeah. You know, for men to be able to receive, a lot of us don't have much practice at that. In fact, a lot of men I've talked to have told me that learning how to enjoyably receive anal and prostate stimulation made them much better as lovers. It made them much better givers because they had the embodied experience of, for example, being really turned on, really into their partner, but still needing lots of warm-up before penetration felt good. And once you've had that experience, you become, or you're more likely to become, a sensitive and attuned giver because you know what it's like when somebody is rushing you faster than you want to go. And by the
same
token...
Such a good point, yes, yes.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of women I've talked with have told me that once they were on the giving side, they finally understood, you know, how you could be really turned on and start wanting to go faster than your partner wanted to just because you're excited, right? It doesn't mean that mm-hmm. you're a jerk. It just means that you're turned on.
Right.
And so for a lot of people, this gives an opportunity to walk a mile in the other person's shoes. And it can be really an enlightening experience on a lot of levels.
Plus, it's very intimate, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Especially if you think about your... Well, this is why some people have trouble with it, I guess, because you're going into the man's anus. And we've already talked about men thinking they'll be thought to be homosexual, but there are some other concerns just talk about those, the other concerns that some men.
Yeah. Well, so the other two concerns that came up were, is this going to hurt and is this going to get messy?
Yes.
You know, when it comes to discomfort or pain with anal play, that is usually because you're either not using enough lube or you're going too fast. You know, the thing about the anus is, you know how when a dog or a cat gets scared and they tuck their tail between their legs? Human beings have the same physiological response to stress. We just don't have tails to make it so obvious. So there's a reason why people who are stressed out all the time, you know, we sometimes call them tight asses.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, tight asses. Mm-hmm.
Right. Or somebody who really annoys us is a pain in the ass. Or a pain in the neck.
Yeah, pain in the ass.
The other part of the body that tightens when we're stressed is the jaw. So if somebody is a pain in the ass or a pain in the neck, it means that they just make us tense. We get stressed out around them. But the problem is that if you're going faster than the receiver wants, you know, his body is going to tighten up. And trying to force it open or trying to force it to relax is just going to make that tightening happen more so. So anal penetration, regardless of who's receiving, is not about the giver forcing anything open. It's about the receiver learning to relax open.
Yes,
so
that makes
the
sense.
Receiver, right? The receiver is the one who decides how fast the experience is going to go.
Now, as I understand it, stimulating the prostate isn't going to get most guys off. So,
not on its own.
Not on its own. So probably the partner needs to also play with his penis. And when he does start to come, his prostate might feel like it's starting to swell, maybe. And at that point, it can be a very good thing for the partner to try rubbing a finger around the prostate or push down on it. And as I understand it, some men like this and others don't. In the gay community, putting a finger pressure on a man's prostate when he's coming results in an ejaculation. I read this. I don't know about it, if it's right. But when he's coming results in ejaculation that they call a gusher.
Yes, for some guys, it can actually make the amount that they ejaculate much bigger. But I wanted to circle back and just say one other thing about the discomfort, which is that I am not a big fan of numbing creams. And that's for two reasons. Mm-hmm. One is that it's possible with a numbing cream to end up going too fast. And because the receiver doesn't notice that it's happening, you actually can cause some discomfort or even tissue damage afterwards. But the other thing is that they're really not necessary because if you know what you're doing, you don't need to use a numbing cream. So the most important thing is that if anal penetration is uncomfortable, slow it down, bring in some more arousal, and maybe come back to it another time. Like the more you can take the pressure off, the more your partner is going to relax into it. And that is very important.
Absolutely. Because some people have a natural tendency to tighten up their butt cheeks.
Yeah.
If there's some ambivalence about it, about possible penetration, right? So, and then tightening up the butt cheeks and the anus is likely to lead to more discomfort because there's not the relaxation. Do you think that that's right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the trick there is to take it as slow as possible and not be too attached to the outcome. You know, if it doesn't work tonight, all right, we've got lots of other things we can do instead, and maybe this is something that will work again another time. But the more goal-oriented you are with anal play, the more likely you are to just scare your partner off, and that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah, for couples that have been together a while, straight, gay, whatever, combination, they need to have a certain level of trust before they do some of these more, well, in some circles it would be considered a little more toward kinky than straight or vanilla. But you have to really trust your partner.
And, exactly.
And that may not be in the beginning of a sexual relationship that you can trust your partner.
Well, and, you know, anybody who says, well, just trust me without backing it up with, you know, their actions,
yeah,
that can be a little dangerous. So it's worth paying attention to that. And again, take it nice and slow. The other common concern I just wanted to mention was, you know, is this going to get messy? The hygiene piece. When it comes to any kind of anal play, we do need to be a little bit more careful about hygiene. I am a big fan of using gloves. You can get gloves at most drugstores. They're in the medical supply section. The ones that I like, the brand name is Black Dragon. I get them on Amazon. But they're black, so they look a lot sexier. They're actually designed for tattoo artists. And the reason why that's relevant is that the material is a little bit thinner because tattoo artists need to have a little more sensitivity through their gloves. So I'm a big fan of those. You know, I think it's a good idea to put a towel down on the bed because sometimes messiness does happen. You can rinse out with an enema beforehand, but just to be honest with you about it, you know, if you make anal play a regular, or anal penetration, really, if you make anal penetration a regular part of your sexual repertoire, sooner or later, shit is going to happen because bodies are unpredictable.
Yes.
You know,
but for people that are squeamish about that, it is a good idea to do an enema first.
Oh, you absolutely can.
Yeah.
Think of it as risk reduction because, like I said, bodies are a little unpredictable. Anything that gets inserted into your or somebody else's anus should get washed thoroughly before it gets inserted into anybody's vagina, because that is a really great way to get a very nasty yeast infection. But the upshot of all of this is that although hygiene concerns are one of the common worries that people have, you don't need to do a lot to avoid it. You know, it's really just a question of taking a few steps, and those are all detailed, in the book. And you can also find information about that on the book's website, prostatepleasureguide.net.
Oh, I didn't have that down. Prostate. I'll put this in my write-up afterwards. Prostate.
Okay.
Say it again. Pleasure.
So prostatepleasureguide.net.
Okay.
Fantastic.
And that's all to get your book, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got, well, the website has a lot of the information that people need to get started, and then the book takes you much further down the path, so that way you can, we wanted to make sure that people would have enough information to safely get started if all they had was the website.
I imagine that your book sells, I don't know if you've been able to figure out who the buyers are, but I would imagine you might have a slight edge over homosexuals and heterosexuals for your book. But maybe I'm just buying into the stereotype. I don't know.
Well, you know, it depends on how you look at it. I do think that gay and bisexual men, a higher percentage of them who have come across the book have picked it up because there's less stigma in that community for obvious reasons. But given that the majority of the population is heterosexual, in terms of sheer numbers, more heterosexual men have been buying it, even if it's a smaller percentage of them. You know, and I've heard from guys, from 20 years old to 80 years old who have picked up the book, tried it out, shared their experiences with me. You know, it's been pretty amazing. You know, this was one of the questions that we had when we were writing it is, you know, who's gonna buy it?
And yeah, the target audience.
And it's been really amazing to see just how many men of all different sexual orientations have been willing to give it a try. It sort of breaks through a lot of those stereotypes that I certainly had, you know, or my expectations around it. I was very pleasantly surprised, I have to admit.
Now, so prostate pleasure, even when it's explored, may not be every man's cup of tea.
Correct.
But I think it's important to find out, of course, I'm all for openness and exploration, right? Openness, exploration.
I'm trying to pick up on that with you.
Yeah. So, but if after doing exploration, it for some men, it may not just be what gets them off.
Yeah, and that thing with sex is that there's nothing that works for everybody.
Yeah.
And that's part of why I think it's really important to listen to sex educators, or when you're reading a website or reading a book, anytime anybody says, oh, you know, this always works, right? This one technique will always work for everybody.
Yeah.
To me, that's a big red flag, because there's literally nothing about sex that works the same for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked with guys who, you know, love prostate play. If that was the only thing that they ever did again, they would be very happy. And I've talked to people who gave it a real solid try and it just didn't work out. And okay, let's move on to something else.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's a little different. So it doesn't
everybody's
mean that
a little different.
Wrong with you. Yeah. It just means that's how your body is.
So maybe that can be a segue into pegging, which is going to be, for some men, really a turn on, and for others, not so much. And so as I understand pegging, it's the man receiving from the woman rear or anal entry with a dildo or a strap-on. Is that right?
Yeah, so the term pegging was coined by Dan Savage.
Really? I didn't know
that. Yeah, he realized...
He's coined a lot of words, like monogamish and so on.
Right? He's a smart dude. He realized that here was a sexual activity that didn't have a name, and so he set up a reader poll and asked people to vote on which one was the best word, and pegging was the winner.
Mm.
And pegging specifically refers to women wearing a strap-on dildo with a man receiving.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the same word if it's happening between two women, for example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's see, where are we going?
And do you think some men really find this very exciting? In effect, they're being fucked by a woman.
Yeah.
And they're receiving, but for other, well, tell me what your experience is, and I'll tell you my limited experience, both clinically and personally,
sure,
about pegging.
Sure.
So what about pegging?
Well, so people enjoy pegging and anal intercourse, right, because it's a very similar act if it's happening between two men, just in terms of the stimulation. And they may enjoy it for a number of reasons. You know, they may enjoy simply the physical sensation. They may enjoy the feeling of surrender and release. For some people, there can be an element of kinky play in there. There's lots of different reasons why people enjoy it. The important thing about pegging, as well as anal intercourse, is that before you insert your dildo, You really need your partner to be fully warmed up. And for most people,
yes,
that's going to be the equivalent of two or three fingers before you try to insert your toy. And I say that because, and that's especially important because with pegging, you don't have nerve endings telling you what your dildo is doing. It takes a little bit of practice in a way that having sex with a penis, you've got nerves telling you what's going on. And so you really need to make sure that your partner is totally warmed up and ready to go before you start, because otherwise it can be a bit much all at once. But part of what can really be fun with pegging for some people really is just like, you know, taking all of the gender roles and stereotypes and the act like a man boss and all of that, and just chucking it out the window and doing the things that feel good to you. That's a big thrill for a lot of folks, and I say go for it.
Yeah, because it can also, if a couple's doing this for the first time, after a lot of warm-up and arousal and with the point you make about the nerve endings not being in the anus, well, there are nerve endings in the anus, but they're different. They send out different signals. But anyway, the arousal is really important. And that's if a man's trying to put his penis into the woman's anus, that does take a lot of practice and lubrication and all of that, because as I understand it, women some surveys and sex surveys are not always reliable, but like something like 3% of women like it on a regular basis, anal intercourse. That's not very many. I mean, more than that have tried it, but it's that second sphincter that's so hard for a lot of women to relax enough so that the full penetration is possible, right?
Well, exactly. And so what I was saying earlier about how the body responds during stress, that internal anal muscle, which is about an inch and a half inside the body, that one is controlled by your autonomic nervous system. It's controlled by the same part of your nervous system that manages your heart rate and, you know, your pupil dilation and your digestion and all those other activities that we don't want to think about. So you can't consciously make it relax. All you can do is encourage it to relax. And that's really important, because the same thing applies here. You can't make somebody relax to integrate pegging into it. It's something that they need to be able to just open up to, and that takes practice. The other thing just that I did want to mention about pegging is that, so I used to sell sex toys. I worked at Good Vibrations for many years. And one of the things that would often happen is people buying their first dildo and harness, for pegging, would often grab the biggest dildo that we had on the shelves. Basically, it was sort of the sexual equivalent of your eyes being bigger than your stomach. And I really recommend your first timer to out, go for something that's a little bit on the more slender side so that you can just practice it. It's always good to have a more slender dildo anyway, because maybe that's your warm-up before you move on to the other one that you might want to use that night.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really good idea just to start off with something slim and take it from there. If you go too big or too fast, you're taking a chance that you're just not going to have as good a time.
You know, there's another similarity to women with vaginismus. They will use, they need to start with dilators that are small as they stretch their vaginal opening and get it to not contract so much. or at all.
Very similar. Very similar.
But yeah, okay. So they got to start small.
Yeah.
So when you worked at Good Vibrations, that must have been an amazing sex education. I know Jamie Waxman wrote a book about that afterwards.
Yeah.
Right?
It really is, because there's something about talking with people about their desires, their experiences. It really makes such a difference. And it's not something that you can learn just from reading about. You know, I've talked with thousands of people about their fantasies or their preferences, and you know, it's amazing. Every time I think I understand people and sexuality, I learn something new, because there's always more to learn. So yeah, it's amazing.
There's always more to learn. You know, a small study done on with sex therapists. They wanted to find out, well, do sex therapists have better sex? Well, according to this small study, they did, because they could have sex without anxiety. We sex therapists, educators, we have so much knowledge that we can have sex without anxiety or fears. And
that makes such a difference, doesn't it?
It does, and I think it helps toward differentiation, which is David Snarch's big word, but it has to do with being okay with merging at times, as you will in a good sexual relationship, and then coming apart. But while you're merging, coming apart and standing on your own two feet and being able to self-soothe and validate and all that, right? But while you're merging, you can just let go and not have the fears, and you can have a much better experience.
And that makes, exactly, that makes all the difference with this. And with any kind of sexual activity, you're right, it's the anxiety that is the big problem for people's sex lives. And yeah, I see that with my coaching clients over and over again.
Yeah, talk a little bit, Charlie, about how people can reach you and maybe get, do you still offer the half hour, is it, of free consultation? So just talk about how people can access that and what a half hour might entail.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So I offer sex and relationship coaching, both in person in my Seattle space, as well as over Zoom, so over video, and I work with people all over the world. And the goal for me with sex coaching is really to help people figure out, you know, what is the thing that they really want to make happen in their lives, and how can they bring it about? And so I work with lots of different concerns and experiences and backgrounds. I do a lot of work around consent and touch and communication, and you know, how to actually tell your partner what you want in a way that makes it most likely that they're going to say yes to it. So I do a lot of work around things like that. And, you know, because sex coaching generally and is a tricky thing, and people understandably have concerns, we ran out of time, didn't we?
It's earlier than usual. I'm sorry, Charlie, but I will put up on the website how people can reach you.
Yes, makesexeasy.com.
Makesexeasy.com. Got it.
Yes.
Okay, thank you,
Diana.
Charlie. Another great show. I appreciate you so much. Bye-bye, everybody.